Thank you very much for the opportunity to speak. So I will tell you a little bit about some rather involved calculations involving lines and conics on the near ecliptic, and somehow computing deep brain superpotentials for them, and there is some arithmetic at the end.
With no analysis in the talk?
Mm-hmm.
No analysis in the talk?
There will be analysis also. Well, you will see. Okay. In fact, here is the program. Okay. So, so is the study of via differential equations, particularly Picard-Fuchs type differential equations, analytic invariants, Hodge theoretic invariants of. This is the superpotential, okay, of algebraic cycles. And that's what I think of as a deep brain. And in particular, codimension 2 algebraic cycles and families of Calabi-Yau threefold. And then interpret the expansion via mirror symmetry expansion around the large complex structure limit, and that's somehow where the some sort of arithmetics comes in. And I'd be very interested in your feedback on the type of that occurs there, and well, I hope it will come towards the end of the talk, but I have to prepare a little bit and discuss examples. Well, I will discuss the main example where we can then we can extrapolate to the new things. Okay, so the motivation, I still hesitate a little bit to give a sort of motivation, but how does it connect to the workshop here? Well, if we think of Calabi-Yau threefolds, we have Calabi-Yau threefolds. So we have mirror symmetry, and I think of mirror symmetry in the same way that Kevin had yesterday in his talk. So the Gromov-Witten theory of a genus zero of X related to the variation of Hodge structure of the mirror manifold, which is the family of Calabi-Yau threefolds. Why? So for me, X is A model and Y is always B model. That's alphabetical order.
VHS? Hodge structure?
The variation of Hodge structure associated with the family of Calabi-Yau threefolds. And then we have the topological string. So mirror symmetry, this is the topological string in Witten, and then predicted also BCOB, which is Keenan's G generalization of this. And, we heard about the B model yesterday. And the topological string partition function as a kind of wave function. Quantization and the quantization of H3 of the mirror manifold. And so this is somehow where these integral systems are, and I'm going to write it in very small because. So there is some integral system associated with these families of Calabi-Yau threefolds, which comes from the family of intermediate Jacobians over some enlargement of this. Of this base M. So this is Donaghy and Markman integrable system. And somehow this topological string should be some quantization, or should be associated with some sort of quantization of this integrable system. And So when X and Y are local Calabi-Yaus, appropriate local Calabi-Yaus, then some of this can be related to Cyber-Quinton solution of the implicit gauge theory.
Question is not related to quantization of energy. It's quantization of the something else. You see, the integral system we're talking about as a base in modular space of RPR. What you want to get from topological string is to quantize the vector synthetic space where this modular space sits as Lagrangian. And this is what we call the secondary integral system.
I'm grateful for your comments. I mean, you know, I can scrap all this motivation, okay? But to me, okay. I mean, I wanted to write these, you know, these things, okay.
Well, you don't think there's any connection between those two?
I mean, those things are very connected, right?
Well, of course, they're all pieces.
No, they're deformations one of another.
So. I mean, this is not meant to be, you know. I didn't really draw the arrows between.
Well, maybe your remark is actually deeper than
huh?
Maybe your remark is actually deeper than what I thought about.
Well, actually. Okay, what goes here is somehow instanton counting.
I want to scrap that.
I
don't want you to scrap that.
I want to use this as motivation for these, you know, because really these computations are a little bit crazy, and you're certainly going to think that I'm crazy, I mean, when you see some of this. So anyway, and then there is the quantum integral system, okay? And friends. And right, so somehow this is this topological thing is somehow associated with some sort of quantization of something, and I'm not sure, you know, I really know, you know, what exactly, but something which is rather clear is one has to understand deep brains in its context, okay. And these deep brains, if you think of homological mirror symmetry or other things, or some of the talks of last week of Daniel and Andy, understanding the deep brains and reconstructing the sort of the closed string from knowing about the set of all deep brains, then which is, you know, fairly well developed on this side, then you're motivated to also study deep brains in the context of these compact Calabi-Yaus, and that's sort of what's written on my program. Okay, so studying D-brains in the context of these things, less in here, but at least at the moment, but certainly studying D-brains and compact Calabi-Yaus in this.
So is the compactness important? That's part of the novelty? Compactness, or is it just, you could also say you could also have a story for that.
Well, this okay. I think the arithmetics that I'm going to talk about, I don't think appears in the non-compact Calabi-Yaus. It does not. I don't think it appears in the non-compact Calabi-Yaus. Okay, here there is something which appears in the compact, which is the tadpole cancellation. So there are various things, and one thing I'm going to say in the next step actually is going to be is specific to the compact Calabi-Yaus, in particular those Calabi-Yaus which somehow don't reduce to curves. And so that's going to be relevant. Is this enough motivation, Nikita? You're happy, okay.
No, I was even happy with that.
Sorry, and that's another thing. I just want you to draw the line here, okay.
You have to draw the line somewhere. Something nice, but not something bad about
it. So, okay, I wanted to say now, what I mean by deep brain superpotentials, so that you know what I'm talking about. Okay, so it's known for a long time that, so this is about B brains, okay, in the B model. So if you have a homomorphic vector bundle over this B model Calabi-Yau-Y, then the D-brain, the space-time superpotential that's associated with some string construction that involves this vector bundle, is given by holomorphic transimons. Like that, and so okay. Somehow this is the closed string degrees of freedom, the complex structure in the omega, and that's on this side in the z, and the open string degrees of freedom are these. So you have one forms which is somehow coordinated by u. Could have written a also on that side. Okay, but. So anyway, this is the space-time superpotential. This is a curly W, in case you want to keep track of this. And then, right, so this is, in general, you know, complicated, and not normalizable, and so on. But and also, this thing, even classically, is not really invariant. Okay, it depends on really your choice of parameterization of the kind of off-shell state space, and so on. And also needs to be extended to the derived category, really. But what is a simpler and as it turns out, still non-trivial, and as you go further, it becomes quite non-trivial. But for me, really important thing is that it's invariant. Okay, is just the restriction of this thing to the critical points. Okay. So this is W of Z. So is W of U Z restricted to some critical point in the open string direction? Okay. And so this is what I mean by the D-brain superpotential. So you can think of this as a D-brain contribution to the spacetime superpotential for closed string fields. And we're allowed to do this because somehow at least in type 2 and type 2 setup, these open, the closed strings come at higher order in G string. So we can first minimize with respect to the open strings. That's something sensible to do. Okay. And now this on shell value of the superpotential that has a rather simpler mathematical counterpart. I mean, it fits in the concept of the normal function. Okay, so you can identify these on-shell values with so-called Poincaré normal functions, which I will remind you what they are. And these are holomorphic sections.
Is this just an additive contribution to?
Yeah, I mean, this is just
supergravity.
Yeah, it comes at the same level as the flux superpotential.
Right. So we would add this to the flux.
Yeah.
Is it clear that they're sections of the same line bundle?
I think so, because the flux superpotential is just
all right.
The period.
Okay. Good. Yeah. Let's see. So,
So the flux superpotential would be what, omega y to g or something?
Yeah.
And this is sort of omega wedge. Well, okay, it's not obvious to me, but there. Okay, but anyway.
It's omega. I mean, it will become clear. In just the next step, it will become even clearer.
Isn't this guy is defined up to flux potentials?
It is also true. Yes. Okay. So in fact, you need this. You need this so that it's actually invariant. Okay, and that's important. So this thing, I mean this.
I see. So F and the background Ramon flux are not.
They're not independent. Yes.
Sorry. The Trin-Simons term and the background Ramon flux are separately.
Right.
Ramon gauge invariant.
That's right. Yes. Yeah. That's completely true. And it's subtle, but it's also very useful.
Sorry, does that mean that D of the Ramon field strength is equal to trace of F squared supported on the superpotential supported on the brain?
I think this comes at a different level. No, this is no. I don't think. Well, maybe. Okay, I don't want to. Maybe this is. It might be related to what you're saying. But this is really the holomorphic information. It's not so much the topological information that you're thinking about. I wanted to, unless there's more, yes, indeed. I mean, I encourage questions on this.
I don't want to derail you, but I mean, it seems that there are no issues here.
The thing is that this is defined up to trace F squared on
Okay, so these normal functions, the holomorphic sections of this intermediate Jacobian vibration, okay, and they satisfy Griffith's transversality. That the Gaussmann minions make this. F1 HC times some form on this. Okay?
What's
the lift? This is a lift because this is the Jacobian, is H3 mod F2, H3, and then H3 of Z. And you have to lift this to all of H3 to apply the Gaussmann mean, but this condition doesn't depend on the lift. Okay, so it's just. This is the technical definition, okay? And now, how do you get these normal functions from this, okay? So, if you have, now I think this does make sense with the draft category, okay? So, you have some object in the draft category. You can apply the second term class to get some cycle in the second char group. The char group of co-dimensional two cycles on Y, modulo rational equivalence. And this W, then, you can write. So this is a co-dimension two cycle, so it's some sort of combination of curves, actually. And if you now go to the homological trivial part, which is, in some sense, this flat-four cancellation condition, you get a homologically trivial algebraic cycle. And so you can integrate the holomorphic free form over the chain which bounds this cycle. Okay, so I'm going to write this also like that sometimes. And this is also this. Okay, this is in the sense of this normal function. Okay, so it's actually a truncated normal function because you truncated just the holomorphic free form. And because it's a truncated thing and also because it's a tension of a domain, well, I'm going to sometimes write this as TV.
Sorry,
so all these things mean the same thing. Okay.
And quite read. So you have the holomorphic sections nu of the intermediate Jacobian satisfying.
Okay, that's the definition of a normal function.
But what is it satisfying?
Griffith's transversality.
That's gradient of nu is in F1
of H3.
Usually, tensions of domain walls are differences.
That's right. Okay, but. Okay, this is the homologically trivial part. Okay, so imagine you have two homologically equivalent The distinction between T and W is a little bit.
What's the physical domain? Well, how should I? This is the superpotential of a four-dimensional theory with n equals one supersymmetry. How much supersymmetry?
N equal one supersymmetry. Yeah. Well, imagine. Okay, so the simplest. Imagine you have two curves. Okay, C plus and C minus, and the C is just C plus minus C minus. And you have the gamma in between, so the boundary of gamma is C. And that's the tension of the domain wall, is the integral, the chain integral of holomorphic 3 from over this chain.
Right, the domain wall is in four dimensions.
That's right, so the domain wall is represented by some, D4?
Wrapping a D4?
Yeah, I think a D4 on the three chain, okay.
Oh, it's a perfect one. But the domain wall is gamma or it's a C?
Sorry?
The domain wall is gamma or it's a C?
No, the domain wall is gamma. I mean, the five brain wraps gamma times codimension one subspace in four dimensions. Although.
Yeah, so that's taken seriously.
But maybe also, you know.
First of all, it's D5, right? We're in the B model.
Right,
D5. That's right, yeah, so D5 and. Okay, when Greg asked me, I said four-dimensional theory, but I think I rather want, you know, some defect.
Good. Okay.
Okay. On which the. So I want.
Defect in four dimensions, you mean?
Yeah. Well, no, I mean.
A surface defect.
A surface defect. Yes. Okay.
Great.
Okay. What do I want? I want a D5 that's wrapped. A D4 wrapped on C, and then I want D.
I'm lost. We're in 2B?
In 2B. A D3 wrapped on C, and then a D1. Who can help me? I'm sorry. I usually do this in the A model.
It's a D3 wrapped on C, right? And that's a string.
That's a
and
string.
And then it bends, you know, on along gamma. That's a D3.
Yeah, it's also a D3. That's
yeah.
Right. Yeah, it's also a D3. Yeah, yeah. So there's a D3 wrapped on gamma, and the Kalavakur, the D3 wrapped on C, and there's an interpolating. The D3 is wrapped on something more complicated. In the full geometry. Okay.
So it's something interpolating between two line defects in four dimensions.
And you have a two-dimensional theory, okay, and you have some vacuum here associated with the C plus and the C minus, and then you have this domain wall that where the gamma is. Okay.
It's a D3 brain wrapped on C, right?
Mm-hmm.
D3 brain is a four-dimensional object, and C is a two-dimensional.
Okay, so that's good. Okay, so the
D3
on C. Okay, great.
It's better to draw these pictures in the A.
Okay, so the D3 on C is then a surface defect with 2,2 supersymmetry.
Right. It has two vectors represented by because one is plus
six. Yeah, and then the main wall.
All right, so the vacua are the vacua exactly? The homology?
Sorry?
Second, what is the space of vacua of the surface defect?
It's algebraic cycles.
Well, they're represented by algebraic cycles, yeah. These are just the
Well, let's see, can those discrete? Are they coming in families, these algebraics?
Sometimes they're discrete, sometimes they're coming in families. That's precisely the way it is. I mean, that's why this is a little bit.
Are you going to make an assumption?
Something that in here, I mean, if they come in families, this image doesn't depend on the. I mean, it's constant on the family, okay. As it must be, because there's a flat direction of the superpotential. Okay. I really didn't. Okay, so what I want to say, the comment that is also, I mean, this is the distinction, I think, in this case, which reduces to curves, although given the somewhat shaky motivation there, I don't know if it will convince you very much. But the distinction between these, okay, I mean, these normal functions were somehow introduced, these Poincaré normal functions in the high dimensions were introduced by Griffiths to, as an attempt on the Hodge conjecture, okay. But somehow this started to fail when it was realized that actually this Abel-Jacobi map in higher codimension, and this is what this these normal functions are, is actually neither injective nor surjective. And so somehow this, for curves, if you have a local curve and you have, you know, one of these Calabi-Yau's, which is really local curve, then the D brains, development D brains, are really labeled by points on the curve. Okay, and any point can be accessed. Okay, any point in the Jacobian can be accessed somehow. But here, this is not true anymore. I mean, the injectiveness can somehow be repaired. Okay, but the problem really is the subjectiveness, which okay, I don't know if.
Wait. So the Abel-Jacobi map is from what to what?
Well, you can take it all the way from here to the intermediate Jacobian, okay? But it's really, I think, from the algebraic cycle, homologically trivial to the Jacobian.
So the problem is you're not getting to the whole intermediate?
That's right. I mean, in the image, and yeah, and also, that's also is injective. This I already said. I mean, there are these, really algebraically equivalent cycles, algebraically trivial cycles, which also give zero image, at least in this case of correlation to one. Okay, so now I wanted to go through the example and.
By Abel-Jacobi map, you mean not what you just described.
Yes, yes.
The logical trivial cycle, you integrate the formal.
Right. Okay, so what other example could I give you? Then the quintic. And so, in fact, the mirror quintic, so this is not the standard mirror quintic. Equals zero in P4, and don't point out to me that you have to divide by Z5Q. I know, but I don't care. So it's not relevant here. Okay. So these are the cycles. And you can check that that's actually, I mean, that's a curve. So this is a curve in P4. It's a conic. And you can, well, there are two, okay, C plus minus, and you can check that these are contained on this this thing, okay. And so the holomorphic three form is whatever it is. I mean, there is a particular choice for what I'm going to write down. You have to make some choices, okay. And so the TV is the. This is essentially the residue of one of the W. And so TB is now the integral from C minus to C plus, something like that. And from Z, and Z is times psi to the minus 5. And then, so how do you compute this, these things, okay? So this is by this differential equation. So you take the Weaker-Fuchs differential operator. The quintic that's associated with this choice of holomorphic three form, and theta is d by d log z. Then this thing, tb of z, satisfies, well, it's not zero because this is not a period, and it's a certain inhomogeneous term, which is 15 over 16 pi squared, square root of z. And let me just write the formula for the solution of this. So there's a generating, this is hypergeometric, okay, so there's a hypergeometric generating function for the solution, n plus h plus 1 over gamma n plus
2. Z is
psi? Z is 5 psi to the minus 5.
All right.
Okay. E to the n plus h. So that's this
generating. Can you go to z equals 0 eventually?
I mean, this is the expansion of z equals 0. So this is the geometric, the generating function. So, I mean, p on this thing, the different operator is 0 mod h to the 4. So you get actually, standing in h, you get all the solutions of this differential equation, but somewhat remarkably now, at least in this context, the solution of the inhomogeneous equation is so you have to add some periods, okay, and that's related to well, to this mixing with the Ramond degrees of freedom and so on. I mean, these are, if you want, these are some kind of rational periods. Okay, they're not integral periods, there's some rational periods. Integral periods would just be the pi 0 and pi 1. So by themselves, they don't make sense. And by itself, this doesn't make sense. But if you add it, then it makes sense. Okay. But somehow, you can just evaluate this at h equals 1/2, and then you get the correct thing, including the normalization. Maybe the normalization here is the most interesting part. And so what do we do next? Well, we apply the mirror map, okay?
Sorry, what is the normalization that's interesting?
Okay. Something
with the... Marco Longo is just your choice, so that's not exciting. The normalization of capital Longo.
Well, yeah, that's right. But it's a normalization which is adapted to this hypergeometric story.
Okay.
And in this hypergeometric story, it's kind of remarkable that by just evaluating h, so you get these gamma functions when you evaluate it 1/2, and you get the correct thing. And what's sort of remarkable is that this 15 is directly the number of real lines on the quintic. Okay, so. No. It is kind of a miracle, okay, but it's remarkable, really, that this hypergeometric system knows.
H is supposed to represent the hyperplane class, right?
Yeah, also, yes. Yeah. This is one reason why I'm writing it, okay, to point this out. I mean, in this. Later on, I'm going to leave the world of hypergeometric things, okay? But as long as you are here in this hypergeometric world, I don't think you're going to see this arithmetic, okay? But also, you have this kind of coincidence that you can have it. And it's not just going to be h equal 1/2, you can also evaluate h equal 1/3, as we'll see later. Not in this context, but in some other model. Okay.
Bar by 0, bar by 1, I just coefficients in terms of h to 0 and h to the first power. What is this?
Oh, no, those don't. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So this is some pi I h to the I equals 0.
If we analytically continue the z around, then the omega is going to. What are the monodromes of?
You get an integral monodromy.
You get integral monodromy even with h equals 1/2.
Yeah, but only if you add these guys. So these guys are very important.
Okay. Right. Good.
Yeah. Otherwise, you don't get integral monodromy. Okay. Already in large volume, you get something very interesting. Okay, that we can explain. But there's already a plus minus here. The fact that you have a quarter, so you really get these. You really have to have these integral things. Okay. And Now let me. So we apply the mirror map. Okay, this mirror map Q of Z, and then T A of Q. So we define T A as the T B of Z of Q. We invert the mirror map to pi 0 of Z of Q. And then we expand around 0, and then we get these things.
So physically, this is the tension of the building wall, again?
That's right. So we expand. And really there is also the, so there is a T over 2 plus a 4T here, which comes from that, okay. And Q is log, T is log Q, this is the parameter of the quintic. And then we can expand using some multi-cover prescription, K squared Q to the DK over 2, and now D and K are both odd. And then, so these are rational numbers, and these are integer numbers. And these are, so these are the Gromov, these are, okay, yeah, so what is this? This is supposed to be, these are supposed to be open Gromov-Witt invariants, and these are supposed to be BPS invariants of the Cooper-Kummer-Waffa type or Oguri-Waffa type. From 2D, 4D BPS invariants. And now for what system, okay? Well, it's the generic, sorry, it's the Lagrangian, which is the real locus. And there would need to be a discussion here, but let me just say on real locus in, I could say the generic quintic around in some neighborhood of the Fermat quintic. But I can also say the Fermat quintic. Just to be specific, and that stochastically is not P3. So, fundamental.
Well, we had an open cycle. We had this these two surface defects coming from P plus and C minus in the B side.
Yeah.
Related by the chain, and now you're telling us what the A model version of that is.
So the A model version of this is the Lagrangian, the real quintic, together with the choice of. U1 local systems of a flat connection on the Lagrangian, and there are two such because we have H1.
I see. So your your surface defect is now what, D4 brain wrapping this Lagrangian.
That's right. Yeah. So this is what
the vacua are the two flat connections.
That's right. So we have the color BLX, and we have the real locus here. So we wrap a D4 here times R2. And then we have these disks which end there, and these are so these are D2s which end on the Lagrangian. I mean, they're really well sheets. Sorry.
Those are getting those line defects interpolating between the
vacuum. Right. Yes, line or particles. Yes. Okay, and so these n tilde, they are supposed to count.
How
do we interpolate
these?
What
we're supposed to change the
gauge? Yes, this is, I mean, the D2 sources the field, so it changes the thing. So the N tilde, they are the numbers of these maps from the disk to the X with boundary on the Lagrangian on one. And the D is the degree in H in the relative homology. And the NDs are supposed to be BPS invariants. Some integer count. Okay, so that's the standard example which works very well. And so now I'm going to switch to this.
Sorry, so is that counting solitons on the surface defect, or is it
yes.
Okay, ND? Solitons
and
interpolating between these two
vacua. Yeah, and really, because this is so simple, I don't include a lot of labels, okay, but this is the charge of the with respect to the bulk fields, okay. And otherwise there's not so much label because there is just a plus and a minus.
So the D is a four-dimensional charge.
That's right. It's a four-dimensional charge, but it really lives in this thing here. But the, I mean, the vacuo here is just, there's just two vacua, so I don't have to include so many labels.
And you never see the need for DPS invariants for plus to plus or minus to minus with non-zero charge?
No, no. In, well, in some sense, those are all zero in some sense. Okay, I.
But would they be zero if you change the wrong background plus?
Would they be non-zero?
Yeah, because as you said, you know, there's the only thing that's really invariant is the flux plus the churn assignments. Right. And so if you change the flux, there would be a corresponding change of the churn assignments. And I'm wondering if you made a change of background Ramon-Ramon plus, would you need to see a soliton degeneracy for solitons interpolating between plus plus and minus minus vacuo?
Okay, I honestly
think. Is the statement that they're all zero, is that really an invariant statement?
Yes, I'm part.
I'm asking because, you know, there's perfect analogy with what's going on in these four dimensional inequalities.
There is an analogy, right? There is an analogy.
No, the analogy is perfect. But here it seems to break down.
Well, okay, I mean, there is, so it's believed in this Gromov-Witten context that the Gromov-Witten invariants are zero, okay? The corresponding Gromov-Witten invariants, if you would try to define these in an invariant way, they're going to be zero. Maybe you have to count the disks together with the cross caps. There might be some flatball cancellation condition that to really get something invariant, you have to count the disks. Well, in fact, this is true, certainly when you go to higher genus, okay? You have to count the disks together with the cross cap. And then you get something invariant. But when you really get something invariant, the invariant is zero. I think for those states that you're talking about. Okay. Yeah, I mean, this is, as always, you know, I mean, you start, you think, well, everything should be zero, but then in these topological theories, after a while, you know, you get something not zero, and in fact, you get something very, very non-zero, I mean, non-trivially non-zero. So, okay, so this is just the introduction again, and although I gave the motivation, the real reason was because you can. Okay, and this is the example again, should I go through this hypergeometry? Let me just go quickly through the hypergeometric story. Okay, so the interest of the hypergeometric story is that there is this 15 over 16 pi squared, which comes automatically by just restricting this generating function to h equals 1/2. And so these are the open Gromov-Witten invariants for the quintic. And right, so kind of remarkably, it knows already about the number of lines on the real quintic.
Might be easier to see if you count those lines.
Which line?
I think they're right there.
Those?
I think so.
I did turn them all off.
They're all mirrors,
I think. This mirror? Okay.
Your h equals 1/2.
Okay, so let me just talk a little bit about these other one parameter hypergeometric differential equations. So in terms of references, so this computation of the Peter Fuchs, this is with a paper with Dave Morrison, and this story here, this is with Pandavi Panda and Solomon. And now what I'm going to talk about here, this is work by, some work by other people and also work with Daniel. So the computation of these homogeneous Picard folks for these models. So we find this kind of combinatorial thing here, which then we're going to restrict. So this is the first term in this hypergeometric generating function. And so here's the list, okay, so where's the pointer?
Let me ask you something. So you get these gamma functions from looking at the Picard Fuchs equation, which is already a kind of near flavorish computation. But these gamma functions normally people derive from Lagrangian signal theory. you try to get actually directly from the neighbor side?
Well, I mean, here in this from a written computation, you get it from the localization. Okay, so this computation is there. This is the localization computation. But the answer is no. I haven't really tried. Okay, but
you're dealing with disks, which so
maybe one could. So this is somehow the list, okay? And so there are many. So this is a list of these 14 of these one-parameter things. And so this is just to show you that the cyclogeometric miracle works in 10 out of the 14 cases. And in the other cases, there is something. Even the factors of pi don't match. So you want the 1 over pi squared, and yeah, you get 1 over pi cubed, the 1 over pi to the 4. And so then here I have. This is when the integrality is satisfied, okay? Forgetting the factor that the pi squared don't, that the factors of pi don't work. Here's whether we have found a corresponding algebraic cycle, okay? So there is a cycle in all these cases except here and here, and yes, there is some subtleties here of why we can't have a cycle. I mean, we have probably a cycle, but we can't compute the homogeneous peak of Fuchs, and then here where the mirror symmetry at the status of mirror symmetry. So there are two cases where really mirror symmetry is proven. Okay. And so this story with the domain walls and so on is actually more complicated than what I just said, because also in the B model you have not only in the A model you not only have these disks, you also have the intervals between different. We also have 4 chains somehow sometimes, okay? Because these Lagrangians, they can sit them homologically equivalent Lagrangian submanifold. And that's just the mirror principle. I mean, it's just the standard one, and just one again, this is called T. And this is, so we had one example in which actually the real locus. So you can really study the mirror symmetry only when you know when you think that you know that then the A model is going to be the real locus. Okay, there's not really many other constructions of Lagrangians in compact manifolds, but sometimes this real locus actually can be disconnected, and then you have this phenomenon involving these 4 chains, and then actually you get an interesting mix when you compute the monodromy between 4 chains and 2 chains.
Does that number, the 15, or the number of real lines, does that have some interpretation in terms of the four-dimensional physics?
Well, that's one of these.
That's just one of
these. Yeah, it's the first one. I mean, the first one.
Number of real lines on.
This is actually the round number. The number of real lines, it's also the number of real maps. But maybe the number of maps is a factor of 2 here.
Oh, so that's somehow the same. I mean, you usually think of things like ending on the Lagrangian, but you're saying that's the same number?
Yeah, these are represented by that. I mean, in this picture here, the wall sheets and the wall sheets and the states. Yeah, okay. So in the closed string sector, the Gromov-Witten are the two different things, and then in the open string they become.
This map is real. You can use half of it to describe the homomorphic disk.
Yeah. And then you get 2. The 2 sets. Okay, so this is kind of an interesting example. Okay, so this is again one of those, but here you don't restrict to h equals half, but you restrict to h equals 1/3. You still get these factors of 1 over pi squared, but with some other cookie numbers now. Okay, and you actually have to add the 1/3 and the 2/3 to get something which makes sense. So if you just do this again, you have the hypergeometric miracle. And this also satisfies the integrality. And now, so the integrality now has this, the summing of all things which are not divisible by 3. Okay.
So is this Picard-Fuchs, is Picard-Fuchs equation the representation of the
No. This is the next step. So after Griffith's transversality is 0. it's the analog of the Yukawa coupling, if you want. So after the Griffiths transversality, there is so-called Griffiths infinitesimal invariant for normal functions. And this inhomogeneous Fika Fuchs represents this infinitesimal invariant. It's the open string analog of the Yukawa coupling.
It's just the equation satisfied by the periods with the the
one
constant
or the change of bound. Yes. Okay, so there is a cycle for this. You can write it down. I mean, it's related. Somehow that you get one-third, that's related to the divisibility property of the grade here. The mirror is not so clear. One thing which is clear is that it can't be the real locus. I think you can't get... One thing which you want is that somehow H1 you want to be Z mod 3 of the Lagrangian. And I think as a consequence of this, the mirror cannot be the real locus. I don't think you can have Z mod 3 as fundamental group for the real locus. Okay, but maybe this is, yeah. Anyway, there is no Lagrangian known, but predicted that one exists in this particular Calabi-Yau. So then, you know, some this is the beginning of non-hypergeometric inhomogeneity. So this is another model, which is this inhomogeneity, okay? And you see already it's getting a little more complicated. So this down here is the open string, is the open string discriminant. Okay. So here the actually, the cycle somehow becomes, well, these two cycles probably they coincide. I mean, you have actually so it's open string discriminant, and it has the same integrality. So as I said, this is one of the examples in which I think I have a cycle, but I can't really compute the homogeneity. Although maybe one should go back and try it again. Okay, and then there is other work. I mean, you know, many people here. Related to these and other models, actually relating it also to an off-shell formalism, and explaining better the toric story, and so on. And I have a little bit on let me just skip. So these moduli spaces become more and more complicated. There are various other effects involving these monodromies. Here are some of these integers, just in case. You're wondering, so. And here, this is this is quite remarkable. So these are inhomogeneous Fika Fuchs for some Pfaffian Calabi-Yau computed by Shimizu and Suzuki. So this, the left-hand side is the Fika Fuchs operator, and it's already fairly complicated. In fact, the Fika Fuchs operator is really complicated, but the inhomogeneity is still fairly simple, okay? Okay. And I think in these cases, it's really, yeah, I think this case is also supposed to be the real locus in the A model. Although, I mean, the Gromov-Quick invariants have not really been computed. Okay, so this is generalizing to other models. But now let's go back to the quintic, and going back to the quintic is motivated in part by what I wrote in the beginning. Okay, so trying to get a better sense for what is really so fixed the Calabi-Yau and try to see what is the image of all possible cycles. Okay, so what are all possible cycles? What do they give rise to? And there is no better organizing principle for this than to go degree by degree. Okay, so you take the second Chow group of algebraic cycles, and that's kind of filtered by degree of representative curves, and so you just go degree by degree. Okay, so that's somehow what I set out to do. And so I went and actually, so what I had over there was a conic. Okay, so I went back and looked at lines. Okay. So, as everybody knows, of course, there are 2,875 lines on the generic quintic. But now on this one parameter family defines the mirror quintic, they're not all isolated. And in fact, there are 375 isolated lines. And then there are two families of lines, which is each of which is parameterized by some genus 626 curve. And so that the total count, if you count it, actually gives 2,875. So each of these curves contributes with the order character, another factor of two because you have two families. And then there are some special members of this family called the van Bremen lines. There are 5,000 of them, and the fact that there were 5,000, so this goes back to the early days of mirror symmetry. The fact that there were 5,000 of special members. So he didn't write the family, but he wrote those special members. And since 5,000 is bigger than 2,875, they have to be in some family. Okay, it couldn't be that. I mean, he had found more than 2,875, so some of that to sit in family. But then it took some work, and in particular Mustafa, you know, maybe I don't know, six, seven, 8 years ago or something, kind of completed this really to show that, that's the structure of this of the lines on the Neo-Quintic. Yeah, and so now, so but the inhomogeneity was not computed, and so that's something I did. It's not. You know, given the other experience, it's not too hard. So that's the result for the inhomogeneity for these van Riemann lines. And so this is for the entire family. Sorry, for the coordinate lines, they just vanish. Okay, they don't give any inhomogeneity. You look more and more unhappy, Greg. What is the...
No, I'm just trying to understand.
Okay.
So are you
taking a chain between two different lines? And the
okay, now, good. Now I switched a little bit. You see, when you do this, when you compute the inhomogeneity, it doesn't matter where the chain ends. Okay, so I just compute, just look at one cycle, doesn't have to be homologically trivial.
And then is that supposed to be trivially obvious? I mean, it's obvious that the bound, you're integrating on a chain,
yeah.
And you apply the Cartesian,
but
you get something that depends on the endpoint.
That's right.
You're saying,
but only on it's locally only at the endpoints. It only depends locally on the endpoint.
Yes.
So if I have something which ends somewhere here and then ends somewhere else, it's just the sum of the two.
Absolutely.
Okay. So if I can just focus on one cycle and compute locally around for this cycle what the inhomogeneity is, and that's what I do. So
and
that's
so
what
this
I'm doing.
Is for any of these lines?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean these are all algebraically equivalent. Okay. They're not rationally equivalent. They sit in this genus 626 curve. But yeah, for Calabi or threefolds, that's the object who doesn't know about these things. Okay, so it's a flat direction of the superpotential. And in physics language, so this, the superpotential is constant on these families, and it's equal to this value. There are two families. There's a plus and minus root here. Maybe that was.
So it does depend a little bit on.
It does, yeah. There's two, and but then there is this discriminant. So where this vanishes, those two families actually. Together,
you get a different answer if you took one of the 375.
You get zero.
Yeah. I mean, is that obvious that you get zero? Or is it
yeah, that's because they come from. That's because they really come from ambient space.
Okay.
Yeah. So these are things which you come from P4. Yeah, they come from P4. So things which come from P4, you know, this is.
That in a sense, the endpoint doesn't move when you change the volume.
I mean, on band of P4, everything is rationally equivalent. Okay, so there is really not much in terms of the char groups. Okay, and now here is the first kind of arithmetic type of observation. Okay, so if you want to actually get, so you take these van Riemann lines, I mean, maybe one thing you notice, there is no fractional powers in the expansion around psi equals infinity.
Sorry, does the 96 have an interpretation?
No, this I don't know. I mean, I don't know what the... No, forget, there's no... I don't know. First of all, I don't think it's even 96, really.
Yeah, you're 512.
But you have to divide... Okay, so you have to divide by square root of 3 here.
Yeah.
So... Yeah, sorry, and yeah, I mean, part of the it's not really part of my immediate program, but it's to construct Lagrangian mirrors for all these things. Okay, so the integrality, so you can expand it. First of all, you get rational numbers, okay? And then if you want to get integers, you have to apply this kind of multi-cover formula with this thing, so it's still a 1 over k squared, but then there is this decoration here, the chi. And this is some function which is defined like this, okay? So this is some Dirichlet character, okay? It's zero when the thing's divisible by 3, and then it's plus or minus 1 for the other one. And there's something which is a little bit awkward here, which is this thing, 3 to the d. So you don't actually get real integers, you get integers divided by 3 to the d, okay? I'm not sure how to interpret this, okay? You might be able to actually absorb there might be a monodromy calculation which tells you have to absorb these three in the cube. Okay, so there's something which are not completely clear. You might have to change the mirror map a little bit to improve on this. Okay, but anyway, this seems to be the integrality for these things. Okay, and so the occurrence of this combination chi over k squared motivates the definition of something called the D-log. Okay, so this is some kind of modification of the dialogue algorithm. Okay, and I've been told that D-log does not have any other meaning, and also that that this function has not an other name. Okay, anyway, the point here is only because D is for deep brain. Sorry?
Yes, it has another name or does not
have. No, it has no other name. That's why you know, call it deep brain.
But it's just some linear combination.
It's just some linear combination of dialogues. Okay, but it is probably a quantum version of this also. And it might not even be the full story. I mean, some things here are not completely sorted out, and what I'm going to talk about for the rest of the negative 5 minutes. So much. Is okay? Can I go for a little further?
Yeah.
It's going to now. Now it's going to kind of explode.
Time.
Sorry?
Supposed to give us back our time. Let's do 5 more minutes and have an important discussion.
Yeah, I mean, now it's going to really become very complicated. Okay? So now is the conics. In fact, it's complicated because I can't really show you. I'll show you one. So these were all the lines. Okay, so lines are done. So let's go to conics. Okay, and so one of the conics that we told you about. Now there are 609,250 conics on the generic quintic. The mirror quintic has several families, and that's just a cartoon. It's already a little complicated. Okay, so there are several families, and there are many isolated ones, and the full structure is not available. And just to give you a sense, okay, and I didn't really expect to be so complicated, but there's one component here which is given by this equation here. Okay, so this is one component of the Silver scheme of conics on the mirror quintic. Okay, I think it's an irreducible component. Okay.
Sure about that sign then?
No. Well, yes. Everything is. Okay, so that's kind of. Sorry? Yeah, okay. So U and V, does it matter?
No.
Yeah, so. Sorry. So, no, I.
It's an equation with a plane curve. It's the equation with a curve.
This is an equation of it. So. U and V are some local coordinates on the, well, they're related to some local coordinates on the moduli space of conics in P4. So the way you study conics on the quintic, you look at conics in P4, and then you look which ones actually live on the quintic, and so that's some kind of intersection problem, and so you solve these equations, okay, and there are many components, and then you make some variables, change the variables, and you eliminate some variables, and that's what you remain with, okay, and this is really, it's quite a simple form.
Oh, like the new polygon ever, just to see the term showing there.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to draw the Newton polygon on the next slide, okay, but this is for different one. I mean, this is the U's and V's are not, there is some, you should ask where's the psi here, really, okay. But the psi is some rational function on this curve, okay, which I cannot compute. So, that's, I mean, the computer is not able to do this anymore, Anyway, so that's this thing, okay, but you know, these are just conics on the mirror quintic, okay. But so what can we do? Okay, so the next thing we can, you know, since we can't treat these equations anymore completely, theoretically we can still expand, okay. And then you get these, and then when you expand around z equals zero, so a large complex structure limit, you rather soon hit these, this fact that you have to work in some extension of the rational. You have to work in some algebraic number field here. And so just for the cycle itself, and then also, so the cycle itself has the expression of the cycle is an algebraic number field. And then you can still think, okay, maybe there is a miracle that, you know, after you come to the cycle and you compute this chain integral and so on, and then you expand, maybe it still lives in the integers. Okay, and this miracle so far has not happened. More precisely, I'm quite convinced that you cannot avoid this. That first of all, these expansion coefficients, the Gromov-Witten-like expansion coefficients, live in this algebraic number field, but also the integers, okay, I mean the integer invariant. Something which seems to happen is that these coefficients, when you're solving this d-logarithm or the d-logarithm, are algebraic integers. That seems to happen. I mean, of course, there's no proof. And
so eta is good.
No. Eta is okay. So what is eta? In fact, so eta can be fairly complicated. But here's this. So this is another component. So I didn't show you the. This is the next most complicated component of this Hilbert scheme of conics. Sorry?
It doesn't look that complicated.
But the inhomogeneity actually is still, you know, that's kind of, yeah, so I was trying here over the last couple of weeks to compute the inhomogeneity for this thing. So how does this expansion arise? Well, this is the Newton-Puiseux expansion, okay, so I think it's maybe the oldest appearance of algebraic number fields. So you look at the expansion solutions of this algebraic equation. So again, the A, so the psi is just the complex structure parameter of the quintic, and the A is some local coordinate on the on this Grassmannian, this moduli space of conics on the MP4. So to see these number fields, well, you draw the Newton polygon of this thing, okay, and that looks like that. And then when you expand around psi equals infinity, you have to look for the sides of this polygon, okay, and so here you have a degree 5 equation, and there are 5 solutions, and 3 of them behave as psi, and the algebraic number here is eta 1, satisfies this equation. And the other one is somewhat simpler. Okay. Well, these are, these are 2 of these 5. And I mean, something you also see, so this is really an irreducible component of this thing. So when you go through the moduli space and come back, okay, so you expand around a large complex structure, and then you go inside and you come back, you get different number fields. Okay. So these number fields.
Different
numbers. Yeah.
Related by some gamma transformation.
I mean, related by this equation up there, okay. I don't know if you get the same Dirichlet character. I haven't, okay, this I haven't completed the computation yet, but you might or might not get the same Dirichlet character. I don't know. Well, in some sense, it's not very likely, because in fact, even the order of this, so here you expect something of order 3, right? But here, I don't know what you expect for the Dirichlet character. Maybe you don't. You shouldn't have any at all. Anyway, so, and there are other examples which have these other exponents here. 1/7 actually occurs. This is from this monster component, okay, that I wrote, and that's the number field, okay. So these eta is the solution of this equation, and that's just for the expansion of the cycle. I mean, for these, I haven't really finished the computation of this homogeneous Pica focus. And anyway, so I don't want to offer too many conclusions, but you know, these are some arithmetic invariants that you attach to these D brains in the large complex structure limit for each such D brain configuration, and it becomes already pretty complicated for lines and conic. Now this might be a warning, okay, but maybe there is some other miracle in which you can simplify things and get better understanding. So this certainly could be continued. Thank you.
One quick question. Is there a periodic version of Nicolaus on this?
I have no idea. No, I haven't. You mean that's something that
because the periodic disks are like these broad trees.
Oh, you mean this periodic string field theory or something like this?
Yeah. Not string field theory, just evolution, crazy evolution.
Gandila said all look pretty interesting structures when they study the quintic field.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
I mean, quintics were studied on the new other side, where you have the periods.
That's right. So.
But what I'm asking is, when on the other side, you can do something, because that our friends at DARPA, I'm sure would be.
Oh, if they want to do this, yeah.
You
don't do something.
Networks. It will be something. About.
You see something which is, I mean, this the counting of disks. That's very, I mean, the counting of these real disks, that's something very, I think that's going to just, you know, go through anything you want to do with it. Okay, I mean, this is the counting of the real invariances is kind of real, what I call real topological string principle, where if you have some complex counting problem, you can, that can, let's say a counting problem which can be computed by localization, then you can look at the real version of it and it always works.
Okay, let's thank you for the experiment.